Over the past 20 years, Great Britain has produced a huge quantity of popular music that's gotten very little attention in the United States. So much, in fact, that it's practically impossible for American fans to keep up with it. In an attempt at a crash course, Rhino released a four-disc collection called the Brit Box. Rock historian Ed Ward gives it a listen.
I'm the sun and the air of a shyness that is criminally vulgar. I am sun and air of nothing in particular. Shut your mouth, how can you say? I go about things the wrong way. I am human and I need to be loved, just like everybody else does.
The British music scene is very different from the American one. Britain is, and always has been, the home of pop. Music which revolves around the three-minute single, produced by fresh new faces, promoting fashions and clothing and lifestyle, who may or may not have staying power. It hardly matters. There's always more where they came from. Once punk became established on the UK charts by the early 80s, the question became, what next? And a young man named Stephen Patrick Morrissey decided to answer it directly. Fortunately, in Manchester, where he lived, there were plenty of young musicians eager to upset the city's traditional rival, Liverpool. And fortunately for Morrissey, one of them was a guitarist named Johnny Marr, who was a genius. Their band, The Smiths, released a single, How Soon Is Now, which sounded like nothing which had come before, and a new era in British pop was born. By the end of the 80s, it was influenced by dance music, some of it, and it was almost inevitably released on small labels, at least at first, and it seemed like an awful lot of it was from the city that had become known as Madchester.
Husband don't know what he's done. Kids don't know what's wrong with Mum. She can't say, they can't see. Putting it down to another bad day. This is how it feels to be lonely. This is how it feels to be small. This is how it feels when your word means nothing at all.
The Inspiral Carpets were typical, starting their own label, Cow, and getting lots of press in London before signing with a larger indie label, Mute, where they had success for a while. Scotland was another fertile area for the new pop. One of the first bands from there was the Jesus and Mary Chain, fronted by the Reed brothers, William and Jim, whose sound was classic enough to give them a string of hits.
Hey, honey, what you trying to say? As I stand here, don't you walk away.
British rock press, weekly papers like the New Musical Express and Melody Maker, stirred up controversy, pitting rockist bands, which relied on traditional guitars, against the ones who used keyboards and synthesizers and often had their singles remixed by dance music producers. But the reality was that all the fans were listening for was songs that stuck in your head. You only needed one to achieve fame.
Thank you.
Laws from Liverpool were a perfect example. There She Goes from 1988 was a pop masterpiece, but the last I heard, the band was still working on its second album. Others never even got that far. Creating an album's worth of material was hard, and although they all did it, it didn't mean the fans had to buy it, and a lot of them didn't. The American music business of the time was more conservative, looking not only for singles that were well-defined in terms of melody, lyrics, and structure, but bands which could tour and play their stuff live. When a bunch of kids with a well-produced single gets catapulted to fame on a small island, it doesn't necessarily mean they have the right stuff to sustain a career. Some of them, though, did.
Maybe I don't really want to know how you got in grows, 'cause I just want to fly. Lately, did you ever feel the pain in the morning rain as it soaks you to the bone? Or maybe I just want to fly, want to live but don't want.
Noel Gallagher had been a roadie for Inspiral Carpets, and with his brother Liam, obviously worshipped the altar of the Beatles, although they were from Manchester. Putting together a band called Oasis, they were able not only to conquer Britain, but the U.S. as well, where Live Forever was a top 10 smash in 1994. At home, they were in heated competition with a band called Blur, but in a pointed illustration of how Britain and America had drifted apart in the pop world, Blur never made a dent in the States. One other band from this era deserves mention, if only because they broke all the stereotypes. Jarvis Cocker had had a band called Pulp since he was in college, and after nearly a decade of getting nowhere, he was about to pack it in when one of his singles was raved about by the press. Suddenly, Pulp was hot. Their 6-minute extravaganza of a single, Common People, proved that in 1994, British pop could still come up with something both old and new. I'll leave you with a bit of it.
She came from Greece, she had a thirst for knowledge. She studied sculpture at St. Martin's College. That's where I caught her eye. She told me that her dad was loaded. I said, in that case, I'll have room with Coca-Cola. She said, fine. And then in 30 seconds time, she said, I wanna live like common people. I wanna do whatever common people do. Wanna sleep with common people. I wanna sleep with common people like you. Or what else could I do? I said, oh, I'll see what I can do.
Rock historian Ed Ward lives in Berlin. He reviewed the Brit Box on Rhino Records.